It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
And then Bender says, I had this terrible dream. It was all ones and zeros. There's a pause and he says, I think I saw it too. And then Fry says, it was just a bad dream, Bender. There's no such thing as two. And that's how that scene ended on the Futurama episode I was watching just before we started recording.
Okay.
Or I guess probably how that scene started.
But maybe you had to be there.
Possibly. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast in the world that does a cold open. I guess it's not technically because we have a theme song, but like the opening move is midway through a story about a scene from a season 2 Futurama episode, and that's it. We're done with it now.
Yep.
Like any other podcast that would do that, there probably aren't any, would be about that show or something.
Is it technically a cold open that we do?
No, I don't think so, because to us it is. Like, you actually listen to the podcast. I never listen to the podcast. I think it's terrible. I rate it as poorly as I can. So to me, this is always the beginning. You just hit play, and this is what it is. Technically, though, we do say what the show is before this, so it is not a cold open. Mm. And technically, Sir Guido has already said live from New York at Saturday
That's
night.
That's true, yeah, yeah.
So, I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 333.
And it's part one of a two-parter, because we're not going to be able to do this next week. So, for you, it's going to be a week. For us, it's going to be like 10 minutes. It also means I'm going to explain how this works in case there's newcomers in this episode. Not in the next one.
People,
if you come to the next one, you don't know what the show is about, come back to this one. I should probably say that in that episode.
Maybe, yeah.
But in case you thought it was a prank, but you go to check, this is me confirming, yes, he was telling the truth. He has told the truth.
He has.
And you did have... came here.
That's an interesting thought. Do you think time travelers would adopt like different verb tenses?
They would be
saying things like you were just saying, but they totally understand one another because as time travelers, they have to adopt different verb tenses.
What I think is the most solid time travel based system in all of science fiction, the RPG continuum, does play around with that kind of stuff. They talk about, well, except that they just co-opt them for other things. So everybody has a yet. And a yet is their subjective future right then. So the things they haven't done yet. And frequently they keep a record when they find out about them from other people. They're like, oh, I'm going to do that sometime. And they make a note. They actually have a physical device they carry around to keep track of this kind of stuff. I'm trying to think of other ones. I think they sort of unified the terminology, but they sneak in little things like that and have adopted things where like you're the junior or senior if there's more than one of you in a place. Because this isn't one of those where magic says you can't be in the same place with a version of yourself. You absolutely can. Okay. One of the opening stories, in fact, involves somebody being brought into the world of time travelers, and then at the end of the story finding out that the person who did it is her future self, who already is a time traveler.
Mm. Because technically, we've talked about this before, technically whether you go forward or backward in time, you should run into yourself. Unless you never made it back.
Yeah.
Right? So, you should always run into a version of yourself, no matter where you go.
But that's assuming the one-dimensional time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It does assume that. You're right, it does assume
actually,
that.
Actually, you should run in... See, you will run into yourself when, not where.
Yeah, yeah. Because, you know, if I go forward in time with the intention to come back to where I started, and presuming I do go back to where I started, then I should see myself in the future, not just in the past.
Mm-hmm.
But usually time travel things, you see yourself in the past, but you can go forward in the future and not run into yourself there. It seems like that... Well, maybe that's not true.
Unless... Well, I guess that's true for all time travel, that unless it's pertinent to the plot. It's
yeah.
But I do think that gets used less. And I do love that so often that gets used to where the past is sacred.
Yeah.
But we don't care about
the
future.
The future is somehow different. We can do something to that, but it's...
Yes,
and yet
you'll have the story where people from the future come and say, you have to fix this thing that's going to happen.
Right.
And I'm like,
I mean,
wait, what if we didn't?
Your future is somebody's past, so
yeah.
It should all work the same.
So that always gets weird. But yeah, again, and I love talking about this game that I never actually played. There's stuff like, the sad example there for that is Time Traveler's watching TV and he's out of beer. And so he reaches under his chair and there's a beer there.
Because he's going
to
do...
In his yet, he has to do that. But, like, they have mechanics built into that where you have, like, a little bit of sort of temporal instability until you do that later.
But they do that in... That's a trick they use in Bill and Ted, right?
Like, yes, they
like,
do.
Like, you know, it would be great if we did this. Okay, I'll do that. And then, there's the thing
there's
need.
There's a few of them that have that kind of... I think Primer uses it, but who the fuck knows? I mean, it's Primer. But yeah, no, that's a trope I like too. I think that's a neat idea. Okay, for those of you just joining us, not from coming back from, I mean, you guys too, I suppose.
Yeah,
yeah,
sure. Anybody.
For those of you just joining us, or for the second time, because you did it wrong. here's how the show works. We have a hat. It's magical. In that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people, like yourselves, cool people, awesome people, part of our small but tight-knit community of hatters that has really come through when I have asked you guys to write the friggin' hat, so we have some friggin' questions. Good job.
Good job.
Anyway, people like that you could also be one of, write in to the email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them. It's ergonomic, I just always like that one, servants, draw those note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored, do that for about an hour, that's the whole show, then spend a couple minutes cleaning up the file, and then do the next episode for next week.
And actually, we spend a lot of time talking about other things that don't have anything to do with
Yeah, very little of our time is based on our premise.
Yeah.
Less as time goes on.
Seems like it.
Because in the beginning, I feel like the listeners are like, oh, what's that? Like this? What? And they realize that pretty much its only interesting thing is it transmogrifies and us ergonomic servants.
That's it.
And the interdimensional part, but...
Yeah, that seems popular.
Mm-hmm.
We should just skip it more often. So
I feel people. Like. But this time, no. We're going to do double duty.
Yep.
So how will your 2 weeks be? Wait, no. That's backwards. How is your week?
It was okay. Yeah, I saw.
Now, do keep in mind, we have two episodes. So don't necessarily say everything this one.
I don't really have anything to say.
I've got a few things to talk about.
Well, you can
about,
save
so
them
I'm
up.
I'm going to save some here.
You can save them up all you want. All
right,
I've only got one thing to talk about.
Saw Wonder Woman for the sixth time.
I wish. I saw...
Why is that hard? It's like right at
the... Well, there's just... You know...
You guys are partying.
There are other films we wouldn't mind seeing.
Oh, yeah.
Like Atomic Blonde and stuff like... Is that out? Is that in the theater yet? Or is that this weekend?
I think tomorrow.
Okay.
Oh, I'm so conflicted about that movie.
But anyway... we saw Kong Skull Island.
That's the new one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Have you seen it?
No. I read the movie spoiler on it because I knew I wouldn't, so And also, it wouldn't be that interesting of a story to spoil, so...
Okay, so Kong Skull Island and the most recent Godzilla movie both did okay.
Both of which I didn't see.
With critics, and did okay in the box office, but I'm sure not nearly as good as they probably wanted them to do.
But enough that they're still doing the Monster Universe.
That's right. And I have a theory as to why that is, but I think this... First of all...
Well, I think in both cases they did better internationally.
Oh, well, that's true for, like...
And that's becoming a huge thing now. Yeah.
Pirates of the Caribbean did.
Yeah.
You know.
That's why it keeps getting
sequels. Yeah, exactly. First of all, I should say that I love cinematic universes. Probably because, really, TV is my favorite medium. And what cinematic universes do is it serializes films in a way that I like. But, obviously, cinematic universes are hard to do. Marvel... really is probably the only entity that's actually gotten it more or less right.
Yeah, and even that is starting to get stale.
That's right. So it's tricky to do, but I do like it, and I'm always enthusiastic about it when I hear about someone doing it. But it seems to me that the cinematic universe they're building for Kong and Godzilla, Monsterverse or whatever they're calling it, that dark universe that Universal's building, and most superhero shared universes, all three of these groups are making the same mistakes. And that is, they're...
Shooting it in digital.
No. They're forgetting what genre they should be working in.
Romantic comedy.
No, they're all trying to make action movies, which is a genre.
True.
Okay, that we need to understand that there's something called the action movie genre, and that's a thing.
Mm-hmm. But and John Wick is crushing it.
But there are other... I'll agree with that, even though I haven't seen it. Everything I've heard
that's what I mean. Like, I didn't like the second one, but as far as audiences, people freaking love that.
But there are other genres that are not action movie genres, but nevertheless have action in them.
Mm-hmm.
Superhero movies would be in that category.
Monster movies?
Monster movies, I think. Thrillers, and some horror is that way also. And I think what's happening is, like, especially with the dark universe, they need to understand that these movies need to be supernatural thrillers, not action movies. Mm-hmm. These monster movies they're making need to be... I mean, when you watch King Kong and the original Godzilla movies, they've got some meat. I mean, they've got interesting characters and interesting conversations that go on. They're compelling films and compelling storytelling. They're not just action movies.
Mm-hmm.
And if you try to make them just action movies, you're going to miss the mark. And superhero movies are the same. You can't just have nonstop action. There's got to be story. There's got to be character development. There's got to be that kind of stuff.
Right.
And even if... I think one of the reasons the monster movies are working a little bit better than, say, Dark Universe is because there's a lot of overlap between people who like action movies and people who like big, you know, giant monster movies. But even the people who are in that space in between... like both kinds of movies.
Mm-hmm.
So when they go to see one kind, they don't really want to necessarily see the other kind.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that all of these cinematic universe people need to think about what genre should we be working in and not be making action movies instead.
And I absolutely agree with you, but I have this pin.
Okay.
And I'm going to have to use it on your balloon. I'm terribly sorry.
No, that's all right.
I absolutely agree with you. So never gonna happen. And here's why. The method they are using is working to a lesser degree here, but we're becoming less relevant because there's so many freaking people out there, and internationally these movies are making well more than they need to be considered box office successes. And even though it is highly likely that they would make even more money if they did what you said, the studios are in no way going to ever risk making tons of money to try and make extra tons of money, because they're wusses about that.
Okay, so, because I've heard that argument, and I've heard people say, like with Pirates, for example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, didn't worldwide it make something like $1 billion? And yet, but here it made almost nothing.
Really bad.
Yeah, it really flopped.
It had an amazing drop-off after the
So its domestic versus worldwide difference is like... 79% of its gross was overseas or some ridiculous thing. Okay. And what people are saying about movies like that is that studios would like the movie to be successful domestically as it is overseas, because that's just more money. So why wouldn't they try to be thinking of ways to make money in both places?
Yeah, and that's absolutely what they would tell you, I'm sure.
But what you're saying is that they're afraid to make any changes that would make more money domestically, because they're afraid that what would really happen is, even if they make a little more money domestically, they'll make a lot less
potentially,
and then end up with a net loss.
Or even that they just don't agree with you artistically, because they're not necessarily particularly... I mean, the people with the money decisions here are not true artists.
Sure, so...
That. So they might be like, yeah, no, I think people would think that was fruity. You know, that kind of bullshit. This is what they would say. Potentially. But either way, even if they believed you, it would still seem like a risk. And that's why all these things look... That's why MCU looks this way. Once you find a formula that works, you never deviate from.
Well, and then now, so
until it stops making money,
bring Wonder Woman into this conversation, and Wonder Woman's domestic versus foreign is almost even.
Yes, but her domestic was really awesome.
No, and what people are saying is she's not underperforming foreign; she's overperforming domestic.
Yeah.
But there are some people who think no, she's underperforming foreign, and they're saying that because if you look at something like Beauty and the Beast. There's a movie that worldwide did over $1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
And Wonder Woman won't probably make more than Batman v Superman did worldwide.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, crushed everything domestically.
Mm-hmm.
But worldwide is probably not going to catch up with Batman v Superman. So for some people looking at that, they're saying, okay, see, you make a balanced movie. And yeah, we made a lot of money, but Batman v Superman made more money worldwide than Wonder Woman did, even though we sort of sacrificed our domestic audience by making a crappy movie. You see what I'm saying? And they could use that as a reason to argue the thing that you were talking about a second ago, which is, why should we do anything with our domestic strategy when we're making so much money foreign? And when you get Wonder Woman, which is arguably a more balanced picture, still, yeah, it makes a lot of money, and we're happy about it, but it didn't make as much as Batman v Superman, which really only impressed foreign audiences and not domestic audiences. So why should we fix it?
Well, first of all, across the board, Wonder Woman made a lot more than a lot of other movies that got more and more and more sequels. Like, Wonder Woman's breaking a lot of records
that's right.
In terms of total box office.
That's right.
And it spends either way. So it guarantees they're going to try and do more of what they think worked there.
Yeah.
Which they're going to be wrong about.
Okay.
But, and the same thing applies. If they're like, oh, you know, they'd be like, you know what? We're not going to take the risk. We had something here. We're going to try and copy that.
Yeah.
It doesn't by any means mean they're going to suddenly do like, you know, get rid of all those male-led ones and do more like that. That's not gonna happen. But this line, we're clearly there's something here, and we're gonna go with it. And of course, the first thing they're gonna go with is that it was a female lead.
Yeah.
Hopefully, the second thing they go with is that it was a female director. But I don't know about that. But first thing they're gonna go with is a female lead, which means, regardless, we're gonna get at least 2, 3, probably 4 female-led big budget superhero movies. And at this point, that's just awesome.
Mm.
Because then we'll have a base to compare from.
Mm-hmm.
Then, theoretically, there will be at least enough difference in performances in places that the conversation will come up about what in these movies could be changed, and not just the clearly woman movies don't make any money.
Yeah, yeah.
Because right now, you can call Wonder Woman a fluke.
Yeah, some people can,
yes.
Sure. Or will.
If the next one makes a whole bunch of money, which it will, even if it sucks,
yeah,
we'll all go see it to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, from what I'm hearing, I'm hopeful already. But, so that'll make a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
So then we'll at least get 3.
Well,
and at that point, you can't really say, oh no, that was just a fluke that time.
If the second movie is only as good as the first one, it'll make more money, because that's how it goes.
Yeah.
The first movie... Like, the first Iron Man movie didn't... I mean, compared to Wonder Woman, didn't make that much. Iron Man 3 made more than Wonder Woman's making, but that was the third installment.
And by that point, you've hooked everybody in.
That's right.
Once you've watched one, you're like, unless you actively disliked it, you might as well watch the next one.
Right. And that's, I mean, that's an extraordinary thing about Wonder Woman's performance is the only movies that are outperforming her are like the third installment, which, you know, that's not really a fair comparison. She's never had a movie before. Yeah. So for her to get with even a stone's throw with Iron Man 3 is really impressive.
And that's, I love this because this gets the executives where they live. This is the whole thing. Now, as dumb as I think they are, and as myopic and as sexist as I think they are, they're gonna do it because the money's there.
Yeah.
And we're gonna get more. And that's what I want at this point. It's just more representation. Just give me another one. And we can say, the next one, wow, something went wrong here. Why is she in stiletto? What the fuck is this? Oh my god. Like, whatever, you know? But I'm sure we'll be able to see some pretty straightforward reasons why that was.
Sure.
And I'm sure Patty Jenkins will have gone on a tirade on Twitter that I will have just been eating up long before that ends up happening.
Then we have
something to talk about, and we have examples. So now we're not saying female superhero movies can't work, or even Wonder Woman movies. We say, well, clearly one can work. And then this one.
Well, and then we're talking about female-led and female-made movies in the exact same way we talk about male-led and male-made movies, which is how it should be.
There we go.
There shouldn't be any difference in how we talk about them.
No, I don't actually think we're going to get close to exact, but the point is it gets us further in that direction.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see what happens. But I just, you know, to me,
but how did it look? Did Kong look good?
Oh, it looked fantastic.
Yeah, that's the only question there ever is.
It did look fantastic.
Assuming the rest of it was ass. Like,
but it could have been a really good film.
Oh, yeah.
And remember when I said, I don't know if you remember this, but when I look at all of the old Godzilla films, except for the most recent one, and all of the old King Kong films, because there have been a few and I've watched them all,
mm-hmm.
The very first Godzilla film, the monster definitely expresses, you know, Japanese cultural concerns and fears around nuclear whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And the first King Kong movie represents American fears around people of color, specifically black people,
mm-hmm.
and women.
Mm-hmm.
The newest, and a lot of the films since then do the same on both sides, mm-hmm. on Godzilla and like the 70s King Kong almost doubled down on those things in a bizarre way. The most recent Godzilla movie, they
Force of Nature.
Well, yeah, they've There's switched that, it a little bit, but there's still a little bit of that concern, nuclear concern. Mm-hmm. And in this movie, I was wondering, is there still going to be a
little afraid of black people?
Yeah, a little afraid of people of color.
I don't know.
And it was there just a little bit.
Well,
it's like
they
had to do something a little bit.
I mean, spoiler for fucking Skull Island, but if I remember correctly, does Samuel L. Jackson turn out to be the asshole?
Yeah.
Yeah. See that? Yeah, there you go.
That's part of it.
It's like,
there are natives on the island.
Samuel L. Jackson plays everything, but it breaks down into two roles. good guy and bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
And when he plays a good guy, he does a great job and wonderful. When he plays a bad guy, the movie's always a little bit about white man's fear of black men. Like, it just automatically.
You're probably right.
And I don't
know
if it's the magic of him or if it's the shittiness of the screenwriting and they're like, you know who we should get for this. But Samuel Jackson, when he's evil, maybe this is true of a lot of guys, actually. When you've got a black villain, do they sort of have to stand in for fear of the entire race?
I don't know.
That's an episode for a goddamn podcast that gives a damn. Try that, actually. Who am I kidding? I'm sure there are 53 podcast episodes out there specifically about that.
But, I mean, if you're a person who who really likes to see spectacular visuals in a movie, by all means see it. But I don't, it's a shame I mean, people make fun of these movies with big monsters like King Kong and Godzilla, but...
I can see the strings.
But man, so the early Godzilla movies were so good. And, you know, I like the whole King Kong stories, or the original stories. I think they're pretty interesting, too. And now we've got these action epics that don't really say anything, and that's a little disappointing. Yeah. But it's just like the Dark Universe. They just want these action movies that don't really say anything.
Now, come on. Here's the thing. If it's a fun, uplifting one, then the message is always believe in yourself.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Or that's team. Right. How what's going to work? Teamwork.
Yeah, right. Teamwork.
And if the movie is supposed to be dark horror or that kind of thing, then the message is either, but is usually, man is the greatest demon or the worst animal. Or if we're lucky, it gets Lovecraftian and the message is, humans are really insignificant compared to what shit is
now, and that's what they're going for. That's what Godzilla went for, and that's what this movie went for, is that, oh, we're so small.
Yeah.
And that's actually really interesting when that's done well and done right,
yeah.
But when it's just something a person says in the movie, like, they were here before us, and it's a miracle they haven't before now come back to reclaim it, and it's not shown, the drama's not shown.
I should have specified also, the message in all the Cinematic Universe movies is also usually relegated to one scene.
And one line. Like, here I'm going to tell you the message, now let's forget about it. No. But it would be really... That's
just lazy there. They should have one line early in the film, and then a speech later in the film.
Okay, well...
Those guys just aren't doing subtext.
I'm just saying, that is actually a very... That Lovecraftian approach is actually very fascinating and interesting, and really effective when it's done right. And there's no reason they can't do it right, but they're not doing it. I don't think. I don't think Godzilla did it very well, and I don't think this film did it very well.
It is a little Lovecraftian in that Lovecraft was also kind of scared of black people.
I don't
Come
know
on.
If that's that true.
Is, no, it absolutely is. Lovecraft was racist as fuck.
Okay, I didn't know that.
Reading his stuff is like, oh, such genius, also, ugh.
You mean the racist fairy visited the love?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Anyhow, that's really all I had to talk about.
Some of it's the time period, and some of it's, like, that's pretty racist even for 1930. Or I guess 29, whatever. It's interesting. I also wanted to talk about a movie.
Okay.
That involves racial issues, at least two part.
Okay.
For those of you really hoping I went out and saw Detroit, fuck right off. I am never seeing that movie. That movie will make me so sad and scared and confused. Also, Kathryn Bigelow, I just get nervous about her now. I didn't watch Zero Dark Thirty either. No, I saw The Big Sick.
Oh, how was it?
I'll get to that in a second.
Now, wait a minute. Do you know the guy in that?
We got him in the background of this.
Okay.
I know him. He doesn't know me. I only know him just barely. We were at the same college at the same time, and it was a small college. So we knew of each other's existence. I remember speaking to him from time to time. We were not friends, per se. But I play that up constantly, that I went to college with him. And he does talk about how he went to Grinnell, and he just gave the commencement speech.
At the college?
This year.
Everybody who went to Clear Creek Amana in the late 90s or early 2000s, whatever it was, talks about how they know Ashton Kutcher. I mean, you know,
well,
even
I
if they didn't hang out with him much.
Because, as I've said in the past, Grinnell's most famous alums never graduated from Grinnell. They always were there for like 2 years and transferred or something.
That's true for a lot of university.
We play up Herbie Hancock, we play up Walter Koenig, we play up Peter Coyote. None of them graduated from Grinnell. So this one is cool because he actually did. And I was there at the same time. But anyway, he is a stand-up. He's very good. He's one of Trish and I's favorite stand-ups right now. He's also a very popular actor. He's got Silicon Valley going right now. He was on the first two or three seasons of Franklin and Bash. He had a podcast on the Nerdist Network.
He does voice work.
He shows up on a lot of he does voice work. He was on Archer.
Mass Effect. He's got a character in Mass
Effect.
Yeah.
He got one in Mass Effect.
And in the new Ninjago movie?
Does
Lego
he, okay.
Ninjago movie?
I wanted to say he had something in like a Nickelodeon thing, but I don't remember. But yeah, he is the shit right now. And he's married to Emily Gordon, who used to be a therapist, but is now, she does a lot of writing and a lot of producing, and she produces a lot of his stuff.
Mm.
She's produced his live shows, but she writes, she does a lot of freelance writing work, out there, and she, and I think she has written, like, for TV and stuff like that, but the two of them wrote a script about their actual courtship, because it was very interesting. It involved them dating a little bit and breaking up, and then her going into a coma.
Oh, no.
Yeah, which I didn't even know that part, and that the big sick is what they're talking about. So the whole thing's just very weird, and, yeah, so they made this movie. This is one of the only movies ever that I said, without irony, I haven't seen it yet, but I highly recommend it. I'm like, that's how confident I am this movie's gonna be good. Because they wrote it, and they were excited about it, and, you know, and I've heard them talk about things forever. And I went, and I was super excited, expecting to love it. I was blown away. And I'm a little pissed, because it's a comedy.
Yeah.
It's a romantic comedy, mm-hmm. which freaks me out right there, because I have to kind of hate it, but I super don't. Like, as just a movie, it's amazing. But also, it's a comedy. I know how it ends, because the married couple that's in it wrote it,
mm-hmm.
except she doesn't play herself, because she's not really an actor, but and he plays himself. So I know how it ends, and it's good.
Mm.
I have not cried so much during a movie in years. Open weeping, not the little misty eye. Open, like, had to stifle my mouth because I was going to start sobbing.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. And I still can't figure out why. It was hilarious. But I can't, I think, unlike, because it's based on a true story, unfortunately that's not what studios will see, but because it's real. Like, it's an incredibly believable, like, it, crazy shit happens,
mm-hmm.
but it all feels real. It doesn't feel like a rom-com.
Mm-hmm.
And there's some serious stuff going on in it, and that, because he comes from, he was from Pakistan, and his family's Muslim, and there's a bunch of shit there. It is impeccably cast. Just unbelievable. I mean, Emily's parents are played by Holly Hunter, which, you know, forget about it. She can play anything ever. She's amazing. And freaking Ray Romano.
Oh, yeah.
I don't particularly like Ray Romano. And everybody's like, oh, in the TV show he was bad, but in other stuff he's good. And I'm like, I've seen him in a couple other movies. He was the guy from the TV show. Not here. I mean, he still sort of was that Alan Alda thing. Like, it still felt like Ray Romano.
Yeah.
But it was perfect. It was seriously like the part was written for him.
Hmm.
Which, in theory, it's just Kumail's father-in-law, so that's weird. But, yeah. And he nails it, and it's a very, like, it's a funny role, but there's some definite serious drama into it. And he's amazing. And just everybody does a great job. There's some comedians that play his sort of comedian pals.
Mm.
Kurt Braunholer's there, and he's playing his sort of idiot, shitty comic roommate, as opposed to Kurt Braunholer, who's been doing this forever, and is really good at it, and fairly successful. And then Adi Bryant from SNL, and Bo Burnham, who's another guy I don't really like, but he was great in this, filled that out. And it's the comic friends thing. I mean, it may help a little that I'm a comic geek. But the movie sort of doesn't assume you know about stand-up. And Kumail's family's amazing. Yeah, it's everybody should see it. I will say this. It is rated R. It is rated R, as near as I can tell, 100%. No, maybe 98%. I think there might be a reference to somebody who has or will get high. But 98% of it is because they say fuck quite a bit. And I don't mean in Bruges, American Hustle levels of fuck. I don't mean fuck where, like, you have a featurette on the DVD that's just a smash cut of all the fucks in it. Which in Bruges literally had, and it's like 3.5 minutes long. But they say fuck like people say fuck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, people who have no problem saying fuck, say fuck. Like, how much I've said fuck here is much. It's more than they do.
Mm.
But they say it. So if that's a deal breaker, then that's the thing. Also, if you're really old, it is one of those relationships that, like, starts with one of them picking up the other one at a bar, and they go home and have sex. And so, like, that's the beginning of their courtship. So if that kind of thing bothers you, I'm addressing this, like, to my parents, as though they listen to this podcast, and as though I'm not going to talk to them separately about this movie.
Did Deck
if that bothers you, then also you shouldn't. Otherwise, everybody should see this movie.
Did Kumail do stand-up in Grinnell?
No, well, yes, apparently. See, here's the other thing. I thought he and I graduated the same year, but he was 2 years after me.
Oh.
And I think in a later year, or either that or I just was so out of touch. He did, apparently. There was an open... We had a coffee house, because of course we did.
Sure.
In Grinnell. The basement of one of the dorms was an actual coffee house called Bob's Underground. And they would have, like, open mic things, and he did stand-up. But from what I know, from listening to things, and also from literally what... I love saying... From what Pete Holmes told me specifically the time I talked with Pete Holmes, he was very timid, both just in life and in his act, when he started in Chicago. And so it took a while for him to find his voice. Apparently, in the beginning, he was very sort of...
Well, then he must have been really committed to it.
Yeah, apparently.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. In this movie, he is... Supposedly, the movie is pretty much just the truth of what happened, except for the fact that it's set in the present day, because they didn't want to have to deal with that crap. So, like, in this one, he drives for Uber, and, of course, that didn't exist in the early 2000s. But there are just bits that I'm like, I didn't know that part. Is that really... Because I'm like, it's stuff that I think is totally forgivable to change, but I'm just like, did that really happen? I don't know. So I really, and of course Wikipedia, though, I want a breakdown of, like, what are the actual differences between real life and this story, which I will probably never get. But anyway, see it. It's amazing. Be prepared to cry. I was not prepared to cry. I am now a shell of a man. Yeah, and that's pretty much it. I mean, I'm still playing a lot of Assassin's Creed Syndicate, but it's not... It's stuff that's fun to do, not fun to talk about. I feel like I saw some other movies. Did I talk about the Austrian horror movie I saw?
Maybe. I don't remember.
It's called Septem. Two E's. S-E-P-T-E-M. It is in theory German for seven, or possibly Latin for seven. I don't know. Here's why it's called Septem. No spoiler, because this is... I don't understand this. In the movie, they break it into, like, chapters. And so it says one, except it's not one. It's, like, Latin or something. And two, and then seven is the last one. So that's why it's called that. So however, but it's spelled S-E-P-T-E-M. And it's just a pretty standard Cabin in the Woods slasher movie. Except for the fact that everybody's in the woods because it's a group therapy session. And they all have drastically different things wrong with them. And what's weird about it is the movie spends a lot of time on this part of it and not the slasher movie part, and has these just ridiculous epiphanies and things throughout just normal shit happening. One guy's getting angry at one of the helping counselors, and eventually he like pushes him around or what, and then they wander off, and the head therapist comes over, and he's just sitting there. He's like, I'm sorry, I was so mean. He just reminds me so much of my twin brother. And then has this little soliloquy about that shit. Like, we had several of those. And it was really... But what's funny is, we talk about this a lot as a joke, but I genuinely don't know here. I don't know if it was being serious or not. Like, it was either dead-on dry satire, or really poorly crafted drama.
Hard to tell. But sometimes.
Sometimes it can be, but like, I always eventually fall on one side or the other. This one, I'm seriously like, was this a goof that accidentally got a little poignant in places? Or was this a serious drama that just sucks? Which, when I explain it that way, it seems obvious which the answer is. But I'm genuinely not sure. So, if anybody wants to watch that, check it out. It's Austrian, it's in German with subtitles.
Did we talk about Ozark, the Netflix?
no, but I talked about it today, even though I haven't seen it, because the timesheet reminder that I send out every 2 weeks, that has weird little stories in them and stuff,
mm-hmm.
apparently whatever I sent today, somebody immediately responded and said, that's pretty much the plot of the Netflix movie Ozark, or the Netflix show Ozark. It's Jason Bateman, right?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Is it?
Bateman directs...
I hadn't really heard at all about it, and then what I saw looked kind of dark and depressing to me.
So well, it is good. That, but Bateman directs the pilot and a few other episodes, and they're some of the best directed episodes are the ones he directs, which is really
so
impressive.
You've already plowed through the season.
Oh yeah. Mm. It's yes, it's not a very cheery show, and it's you know, I don't know if it's for everybody, you know, it's explicit in a lot of ways, but it's really well written and acted.
Well, and just the only reason I might want to see it, and it's a pretty big one, is there's no way, because he's in it, right?
Yeah.
And there's no way he plays the same role he plays in everything else.
No,
and,
I mean,
and I would just love a chance, because that's the thing. I've seen him stretch once or twice. He most 80% of his films, he's the same guy.
Well, I mean, he was in Juno, right?
Yeah. See, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm that's pretty sure he was in Juno. And that was a role that was a little bit different
there
than
was,
he'd done before.
The big one for me was State of Play.
Which I think I've seen that too, but I don't remember.
He basically plays like a professional pornographer or something.
Oh, maybe I haven't seen
totally that. Different. And I was like, holy shit. And I want to see more of that. But yeah, like 80% of his films, he plays the same part. He plays the guy from Arrested Development. And so I love the idea of a whole TV show where he's playing something different.
Well, I think he'd... I mean, if you like Jason Bateman anyway, I think you'd like this, because he's very good in it. I like Laura Linney in just about anything she's in.
I do, too. She still picks a lot of stuff I don't want to see, which is a thing.
But, I don't know, it was pretty good. It was pretty good. I forgot that we saw that since last I talked to you, mm-hmm. Ozark. And it seems like we saw another film that lots of people liked, and I couldn't figure out why people liked it. But maybe I'm just thinking of Kong Skull Island.
You talked before about Okja or mm-hmm, whatever it was. Mm-hmm, what I don't think you told me, or if you did, I just wasn't listening to you during that part. Is this the same director of The Host and Snowpiercer?
Is it? I don't remember.
Yeah, which that information and me. Actually watching a trailer finally.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand. I feel like I absolutely understand what you were hoping and thinking it was, and what I would have hoped and thought it was, and absolutely understand why you didn't like it, and I don't want to see it.
Yeah.
Like, but to be fair, you lose me at Snowpiercer. That movie is so polarizing, but like there are so many people who think it's really great that I always try and have an open mind about it. And some days I'm like, I should watch it again, but I'm like, no, I really fucking hated that movie and thought it was dumb.
Yeah, I don't. I think I've talked about all the movies and shows, but I forgot about Ozark. It's mm-hmm. pretty good. It's pretty good.
All right, well, let's head it up. I have more to talk about. I'm going to talk about it next week.
And I thought the recent Justice League trailer was good.
I haven't been watching the Justice League ones. Oh my god, though, have you seen a Ghost Story trailer?
I don't know what that is.
Shh. Fuck. I know what we're watching in between episodes.
Okay, good.
And then I'm going to talk about it next week. Holy shit, yeah.
I'm kind of excited about the Aquaman stuff, too, because, you know, Jason Momoa, he was born in Hawaii, but he grew up in Norwalk, Iowa.
Mm.
I think he was in the same class as Brandon Routh, because they're the same age and everything.
Oh, that would have been interesting.
So yeah, it's kind of cool.
I love him. I'm you know my stance on this stuff.
Coffee wants to know.
Coffee.
If you could wake up tomorrow having gained one quality or ability, what would it be?
Well, this is cheating because I feel like this is two questions. Because we have to do the version where we're like, I would like to be good at piano. And then we have to do the version where, like, I can fucking fly. So, let's start with, if you could have one trait or quality that's like a normal human, like not supernatural or something like that. Like,
yeah.
Just a regular thing about yourself. Oh, hell. I'm going to put this out here because we're open and honest on this show, but I'm not happy about this, and I disagree with this. But my absolute first thought just now when I was thinking about it is like, I'd be thin and in shape. And then I immediately smacked myself. That is some bullshit. That is some socialization that has been drilled into me that I'm fighting against. So disregard that, listeners.
Is that a quality, do you think? I mean,
or trait.
Or trait, yeah, I guess.
Skinny is definitely a trait.
Yeah.
But that's bullshit. Don't listen to that.
Because I was like,
in my head, I think I was like, something mental, because how many physical things are there? And then I went to that one.
Well, I mean, I don't know what it would be, but it would be something that would help me achieve certain goals in my life. Whatever that is, I don't know what it is, though. Do I need more confidence? Do I need the ability to do marketing better or promoting myself better? Do I need to actually be better at writing and stuff like that? Do I need to...
Yeah, but you don't also get the question from last week where you got the questions answered with the crystal ball or whatever. So you're going to have to pick.
Yeah. That's what I mean. I'd have to... Before
sitting, these are the things on your chart, and then you get out the yarn and the thumbtack.
Yeah, basically. Okay. And then I figure out, okay, this is the thing that I need, and that's going to help
and
me
how
get
to word
over.
It just right so yeah, the monkey's
right.
paw doesn't fuck you
that's
over.
Right. That's right.
Goddamn. Sorry, I'm very fuck-heavy tonight. I think it's because I was talking about that.
That's the overall goal, though, is whatever the trait or ability is, it's something that's going to help me get this thing turned into a TV show or this thing turned into a movie or whatever it is I'm trying to get done. It's something like that.
You know what could work with that? Does billionaire count as a trait?
Well, that's a good point. I mean, if I decided, hey, I just need a buttload of money because then I can do whatever I want.
I feel like we're already getting into the cheating version. I think I've come up with one, and here's the thing. I think it's one of those that's like I'm not thinking big enough, but I feel like it would be really useful in my life. Some sort of like handicraft. Like, the one that often comes to mind is woodworkers. But I just want to already be good at something like that. Because I very much have that, you know, create a physical thing vibe. And, as I've talked about before, I frequently need to start to do things with my hands. So I could actually be like, I'm going to whittle this into a, you know, piece of something. Or, I mean, even to the degree of knitting or something. But it's just, clearly, I'm not... My inertia is too great, so if I could just wake up tomorrow and be really good at that shit, that would be awesome.
Well, often when I'm faced with a question like this, it makes me think of King Solomon, and I think, well, the thing you ought to want is the wisdom to know what to want. So,
ooh,
you know,
wisdom, wise is a trait.
Yeah. Just wake up with wisdom.
But, see,
as a thing.
A lot of the philosophers would be like, the true wise man knows that it sucks to
be a wise man. Sure, sure. But, you know, like, or just the knowledge or the general discernment to know what you even should want. Because that's going to cover a multitude of sins, really.
I can't listen to you right now because I think I just decided I might be Buddha. I am absolutely the man that is not wise, but is wise enough to know that that's how you want to be. So I'm super wise.
Except Buddha wouldn't say that, probably, what you just said.
Well, he probably did the first time he figured out he was Buddha.
Okay.
Seriously. I mean, when you achieve enlightenment, like, I know, he did a little victory thing.
And then got humble afterwards?
I mean, like, he was. He just paused for a second and was like, yeah! I mean, and nobody else was there by the tree, so he was just like, no, me. And then...
Right. Well, I don't have a guess for any, like, superpower thing because, A, I don't really want superpowers.
Well, and we've already discussed
it. And when I joke about it, I get in trouble.
Yep.
So I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, because you want mind control, and then everybody's like,
evil!
I told
no,
you
I don't
story
really
about
want
you
control.
Today about people thinking you were evil. But in Assassin's Creed Syndicate, you hijack carriages, like, carrying stuff because the bad guys own, like, all the businesses, so... We're liberating the goods.
So you pull
like
a Robin Hood.
Exactly. But whenever there's a lot of carriage driving, there's no pirate ships in this one, so there's a lot of carriage driving. And when I play Evie, the girl twin, which I always do, when she gets out of the carriage, if it's still moving, she has this animation like you would, where you're like kicking your legs out in front of you and holding your arms out in front of you to try and get your balance as you're jumping off a moving object.
Mm.
But sometimes it does it even when it's like the animation is set no matter how fast the carriage was going.
Okay.
So if the carriage is going really slow, to me it totally looks like she's doing like a touchdown dance. And it's always at the very end when we've just succeeded in the mission. So I'm like, she's like, yeah, got it. I always am like, she's like, that's how we do it. Yeah, we've sort of done the superhero one, so I don't think we all have to say on that one. But yeah, I would like to be good at a handcraft, physical handcraft.
Well, I'd certainly like to be good at something.
We all would like to be good.
I know, I'd like to accomplish something in life, so that's probably what
I had my wish
to deal with.
Christmas.
Okay, why don't you just drop
it? I always mix up that song and Time in a Bottle. They both have that twangy sound that is all ultimately about how what I really value is you.
I used to perform that song in
Time in a Bottle?
Yep.
I can picture it in what I am pretty confident is 85% accurate reality.
Okay.
I'm guessing at maximum 15% of the details are not precisely as... here's a big one. That's gonna make me, bow tie?
Bow tie? No.
All right. 80% then.
Not that I wouldn't have. I didn't have a bow tie.
I also like that, in my mind, the existence or non-existence of a bow tie is literally 5% of the details of your entire reality. Either means I think your reality is really sad or bow ties are really important.
I ever performed it all by itself. It's probably with a series of songs or like in a concert I performed.
Or a medley, perhaps?
No, not a medley.
While conducting some sort of philharmonic orchestra?
No, nothing like that.
Perhaps in a guest spot on Game of Thrones?
Oddly, there came a time where I was doing very few solos. I was doing concerts. Like, people were asking me to come over to do several songs or to perform several things. I forgot that happened. That's kind of weird now that I think about it.
And then there were the couple of years where you were the hype man for Eminem.
Mm-hmm, no. But even if I sang at a wedding or something, it was usually more than one song. So, not all at once, though. They would be broken up.
Remind me of you talking about singing for the next episode, because I literally have something I want to tell, but if a certain person listens to this episode, it will spoil a surprise, but that surprise will have happened by the next episode.
I see.
So help me remember that.
All right.
We have not got a lot of time, so we got to hit this. Oh, of course. We haven't got a lot of time. So the question is, what is the most important life skill kids today should learn from Stu?
That's not hard, really.
I feel like I've got like 7 different takes on this.
Well, I mean, there's not just one answer to that question, obviously. But I do think in our culture, and especially in the climate today, at least one of the most important things kids need to learn are critical thinking skills. Because if you can't examine critically the stuff that's coming to you through the media or through news or through your peers or through your teachers and parents, then you're going to have a really hard time.
To say nothing with adapting in the job market. No, I think you're right. That was on my list.
Yeah. That just seems like a really important one. But it's not important.
Well, and here's how it gets weird, though. I speak from my own individualized experience and from my own self-identity. But in my self-identity, I have critical thinking skills. And there's other shit I wish I had.
Well,
that I don't. But I'm like, would I be willing to give up my critical thinking skills for them? Probably not.
If we lived in a world where critical thinking skills was a normal thing that all kids just learned, we wouldn't have to name that as one of the things.
Yes.
We would name something else because that's what our culture would demand. But I think our culture
It says kids today, so
I think our culture in particular doesn't want people to think critically or have critical thinking skills. The government benefits from us not having those. Businesses benefit from not having them. Advertisers should benefit from us not having them. So
this is still
lots
a tricky
of people
question,
are against
though,
it.
Because my mind is just flooding with all of the different things that could go wrong if you have really good critical thinking skills, but, like, really poor something else. So just the whole idea that, like, there is a most important, like, yeah, it is more important than the others, but there's a lot of close seconds and thirds
and stuff.
Yeah,
that's, like, true, that's true.
But I mean, I'm not changing the answer, but I'm like, if you had critical thinking skills, but, you know, lacked other perspective, like, you could burn out. Like, there's so many ones you could turn into a sociopath.
No, well, right, or you could know what was going on and understand, be able to interpret the things people are telling you, but then what are you going to do about it?
Yeah,
then
and see,
nothing.
Well, and
I so then
value,
your critical thinking skills mean nothing.
I value happiness very much in terms of a life goal. And so there's part of me that's like, so many ways you could have critical thinking skills and be unhappy your whole life. In fact, you could argue that good critical thinking skills could increase your odds of being unhappy just all the time.
True, but I mean, there's another thing our culture encourages is so much magical thinking around romance and around what you're going to be able to accomplish in your life and all this other
climate.
Stuff. And that critical thinking skills can help
diamond
maybe
industry
can help get rid of that magical thinking, because magical thinking is a real problem. It's not harmless.
Democracy. Capitalism.
There is a lot of magical thinking in those two things.
I am 100% sincere in every example I just put
well,
out
good,
there.
Good, because I think you're right.
Every single example
yes.
I put out there was
yes.
meant from the bottom of my goddamn heart. We have too much magical thinking about sugar. I stand by that statement so much. But in like 12 different ways that I'm not going to get into, because we are low on time, and I got to do another one of these fuckers with you. In between, but I know what we're gonna watch in between.
That trailer.
Yes, although I think it's shorter than it usually takes for this to process. So,
okay.
But that's good. Then I can order some dinner. All right. So, for the rest of you, wait a week, and it will be 10 minutes. Shut up. It's right.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.